We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Wednesday, May the 11th, 2016. I'm Philip Graham. Jim Plank is reporting in the Daily Mail that Cairo Town Board will now meet twice a month, effective May the 16th. Officially designated as workshop sessions, the second meeting will be used as a forum for the Town Zoning Committee to meet, at least for now. Cairo Town Supervisor Daniel Benoit said the Zoning Committee will use that meeting time to rework the existing zoning law into a version more suitable for Cairo. He said, and I quote, "There was a substantial amount of objection to our zoning in the form it was being passed. It was too much, too quickly for too small a town," end quote. He said the deadline for the rewrite is September, time enough to vote on the amended law by the end of the year. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Jim Plank is reporting in the Daily Mail that a landslide on Plate Clove Road in Hunter this weekend dumped tons of earth, mud, trees, and one enormous boulder onto the road. The slide did not cause any serious damage. During the winter, the rustic road is often used for regional bicycle tours because of its steep climb and length, a history that goes back to the 1990 Tour de Trump. When Route 23A is closed through Caterskill Clove, many people use it to reach Catskill and beyond. However, the 12 to 22% grade can prove troublesome with spring rains, and that was the case on Saturday, May the 7th. The Hunter Highway Department had the road passable by late Monday. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced on May the 10th the state's largest Adirondack land acquisition in more than 100 years with the purchase of the 20,758-acre Borries Pond Tract. Altogether, 69,000 acres of land has been added to the Adirondack Forest Preserve under the 2012 agreement with the Nature Conservancy of land once owned by the former Finch, Pruin & Company paper company in Essex County.
Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that Delaware County Republican Bob Bishop ended his campaign to replace Representative Chris Gibson in the 19th Congressional District and threw his support to John Fassel. Andrew Haney is also running in the Republican primary, and Will Yandick and Zephyr Teachout are running in the Democratic primary. Bishop said in a statement, and I quote, "The time has come for the Republican Party to unite behind our strongest candidate if we are going to reclaim our country for our next generation. Part of being a leader is recognizing when another individual is the best person suited for the position. John Fassel has shown us that he has what it takes to best represent our interests. Not only does John have the endorsement of four parties critical to winning in November, he also possesses the skills and passion needed to win the race. It is time for all Republicans and conservatives to unite behind John Fassel in order to continue Congressman Gibson's strong legacy while making sure this seat does not fall into the hands of a radical liberal like Zephyr Teachout," end quote. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential. Alicia Briggs is reporting in the Albany Times-Union that Hudson, New York has a higher concentration of artists than every other county in the United States except Brooklyn and Taos County, New Mexico, according to a study released 2 years ago by the Regional Alliance for the Creative Economy. Altogether, creative jobs such as design, media, visual arts, and handcrafted products, performing arts, and heritage and preservation made up 3.7% of workers, or 23,936 jobs in the capital region, the study said. In Columbia County, creative jobs made up 6.5% of the workers. You can read that full story in the Albany Times-Union. Assemblyman Pete Lopez is hosting an education forum next week in Cobleskill and May 18th in Saugerties. The event at 6 p.m. May 18th in Saugerties High School auditorium will include Dr. Peg Luxick. Dr. Luxick has more than 35 years of experience in special education and elementary education, and she has taught at every level from preschool to college. Lopez said, and I quote, "She has extensive experience in both traditional classrooms and alternative educational settings. Dr. Luxick has also worked for the U.S. Department of Education and is uniquely qualified to discuss these issues," end quote. For our final story, Patricia Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that 17 buildings owned or leased by Ulster County tested positive for elevated levels of lead in the water. Ulster County Health Commissioner Dr. Carol Smith on May the 9th issued an advisory warning to all county employees not to use the tap water in many Ulster County buildings. Smith said, and I quote, "A memo was going out that directs individuals to drink water only from the filtration fountains or the water stations that we have and not to use the tap water or make soup or coffee or tea or anything else," end quote. County Executive Michael Hine said they tested the water because of the ongoing water story in Flint, Michigan. He said, and I quote, "We proactively tested, we got the results, and we immediately acted." You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts overnight a chilly 43 degrees. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 73. Increasing clouds Thursday night with a low around 49. And then showers likely before 2 p.m. on Friday. Continuing throughout the day, with an 80% chance of rain with a high near 64 on Friday. Rain continues Friday night with a low around 48. Saturday there's a chance of showers before 8 a.m. Then it should be partly sunny with a high near 63.
You are listening to the WGXC News Update. I'm Alana Medlock. Katie Kosajansky is reporting in the Daily Mail, a new countywide public transportation system will be available to Greene County residents beginning next month. The system will operate as a partnership between the county and Ulster Green Arc. All Ulster Green Arc routes will be open to the public as of June 1st. Greene County Transit will offer 5 daily routes, Monday through Friday, plus a Catskill shuttle run. The system will also offer weekly routes, including one to Hunter on Wednesday and another to Windham on Friday. Director of Greene County Economic Development, Tourism, and Planning, Warren Hart, said the merger with ARC had been in the works for a while. He said public feedback on the system is not only encouraged, it is needed. Hart said 7 new buses will be opened by ARC, and all the buses will come equipped with a wheelchair lift for handicapped accessibility, two-way radios, dual GPS systems, backup cameras, an internal security camera system, and a public address system. The transit system's website will launch at the beginning of June. Read the full story in the Daily Mail.
Community advocates are in Albany today asking state legislators to reform the juvenile justice system. New York is one of only 2 states that automatically prosecute 16- and 17-year-olds as adults, but Jeanette Bocanegra with Community Connections for Youth says there are good reasons for holding young people to a different standard, a fact that is recognized in other areas of law.
They don't know about consequences. Their brains are still developing. At 16, you can't enlist in the Army. You can't legally buy cigarettes. You can't drink. You can't legally sign any documents.
Nationally, more than 50,000 young people are in juvenile detention, correctional, and other residential facilities, more than any other country in the world. Mothers at the Gate, a new report by the Institute for Policy Studies, looks at family-led community organizations working for juvenile justice reform. According to report co-author Karen Dolan, the research indicates there are many factors leading to the over-incarceration of youth, such as using police to patrol inside public schools.
So we see kids being referred to police rather than to the principal for offenses which would not be illegal if they were 18 years old. So you see a lot more criminalizing of children.
And Dolan points out that only 20% of incarcerated juveniles have been charged with violent offenses. Overall, the incarceration of youth has declined somewhat over the past 20 years, but the report says there's still work to be done, Boca Negra says the message they're delivering to legislators today is a simple one.
The money that's being invested in incarcerating young people and separating families is not working, so let's invest in families and young people in the community that are mostly impacted.
For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
The Albany Times-Union reports that honey production statewide increased 9% in 2015, with more than 3.6 million pounds produced. New York is the top honey producer in the Northeast and now has entered the top 10 nationwide for the first time in a decade among the top 10 states nationally. State officials say beekeepers earned almost $10.6 million last year, up $1.2 million from 2014. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that the New York Civil Liberties Union filed suit against the state and Governor Andrew Cuomo over the state not allowing farm workers to organize. Cuomo, it seems, agrees with the NYCLU, saying in a statement May 10th that the flaw in the state labor relations law is, quote, unacceptable, end quote, and may be a violation of the state constitution. Quote, I agree with the NYCLU that the exclusion of farm workers from the Labor Relations Act is inconsistent with our constitutional principles, and my administration will not be defending the act in court, Cuomo said. Quote, we will not tolerate the abuse or exploitation of workers in any industry. This clear and undeniable injustice must be corrected, end quote. The New York Farm Bureau was not happy with Cuomo's statement. Quote, the NYCLU's assertions regarding farmers and their treatment of their employees are erroneous, insulting, and disparaging, and we are frustrated that the governor's statement does not even recognize this fact, end quote. Farm Bureau President Dean Norton said in a statement. Quote, up until now, he has publicly praised the dairy industry and agriculture in general for the good jobs that they create. It should also be pointed out that farm workers are not the only employee class that does not have the ability to collectively bargain by virtue of the nature of their job. The governor's position in choosing not to defend the state labor law represents a disservice to farmers that make up the backbone of our rural economy, end quote. Read the full story in Capital Confidential.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Wednesday, the 11th day of May, 2016.
Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour, broadcasting live every weekday morning at 8 here on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Philip Gray, one of the contributors to All Together Now. Listen to Democracy Now! In the morning and All Together Now! In the evening, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m., featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported hands-on radio.
Democracy Now! At 8.
All Together Now! At 6 p.m.
Here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On All Together Now! Today, Jim Cashin, who has lived in Claverick at the farm at Miller's Crossing for over 35 years, visits the Hudson studio, and John Schuhart connects by phone to discuss the funeral of Father Daniel Berrigan, Jesuit priest and lifelong advocate of nonviolence and social justice, with host Kieran Riley from the May 9th WGXC afternoon show.
And Jim Cashin is here with me in the station on this May 9th, day after Mother's Day. He is going to be talking to me a little bit about what we both experienced on Friday in New York City, which was the funeral of Father Dan Berrigan. Jim, I want to say thank you for joining me here on the radio. It's good to have you up here.
You're welcome, Kieran. Good to be here.
good. We happened to call your son, who is Chris Cashin, last week. Chris Newman and I got him on the air via phone. He was just finished feeding the cows. And I told him to tell you I said hi. We don't know whether or not he did
he
that.
Did. He did.
Good. So good to have you now on the air. And tell us a little bit about Dan Berrigan and how did your paths meet cross and who was Dan Berrigan and how long have you known him?
Okay. Probably sometime in the early or mid 60s. So it's been about over 50 years that I knew Dan. And in those days it was the anti-war movement that that I was a part of as a resident of Rockville Center, Long Island, where my wife and I lived at the time, and we were against the Vietnam War and against our involvement in it. And Dan became known to me. I come from a Catholic background. My wife and I both do. And sometime in the 60s, I forget the occasion, quite frankly, I met him and got to know him and visited with him in those days in New York City, where he was living up in 90s, West 90th Street, in that area, and got to know him there, and also at retreats at Kirkridge Center down in the Poconos, and at the Pyramid Life Center upstate New York, run by Roman Catholic Diocese. And went to appearances, retreats with him, and actually visited him in jail, in prison. One of the several times he was arrested and went to the prison, and I forget now what the offense was, but I think he and his brother Phil were both in prison in Danbury, Connecticut. And I drove up there with others, as I recall, in the 60s, and met with him on a weekend and spent some time and visited him. And he was a special person in so many ways. He had a quiet charisma about him, let's put it that way, and very intense, but also at times very humorous. And started to read his books and became more interested in his beliefs and what he was preaching about. And about every year I would try to meet him somewhere, either in the city or more often than not at one of the retreats that he would give. And I also got to know his brother, Philip, and his brother Jerry, both of whom preceded him in death, Philip in 2002 and Jerry in last year, 2015. And both of them, as probably most of the listeners know, were also activists, and Jerry up in the Syracuse area, Phil all over the country. Phil had also been a priest and Josephite order, and had left and married. I'm blocking all of a sudden.
I'm just going to interject for a minute here and remember the time where at the funeral they were recalling when I think Phil Berrigan was talking at their mother's funeral. Their mother, Frida. That's right. And they were honoring their mother or somehow, and something about Frida saying, oh, maybe you'll remember, Jim, but he said something about, you know, in order to honor our mother, you know, she really would have been against this war as well. So, yep, I guess we're going to wrap it up and get going now because we have to go to the Pentagon and get arrested, which is what they did to honor their mother. right after the funeral, they went to the Pentagon to protest the Vietnam War and got arrested. I thought that was a very typical sort of anecdote about the Berrigan brothers. And
they always did it, though, with planful way. They and whoever was going to participate in the program or the action that they took would meet, and they would talk about what they were doing and why they were doing it. And people brought various thoughts to the table. Dan's thinking, if I am correct in summarizing it, was that this is what the gospel message, as he understood it, required of us, to be present and to live out the message of the gospel of Jesus as he saw it, especially as it related to the social environment and government and the role that we all play, should be playing. And so we would meet on those occasions. And then, as I said, at the various retreats that I would attend, probably in all 20 to 30 retreats that I attended, the Dam either gave or participated in.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of retreats were these, or what kind of things would folks be talking about? Because we're not just talking about war here.
No.
What sorts of other things was Dan standing up for?
Well, certainly civil rights, and but it was mainly the peace movement, and he did get active in other things too, I'm sure, but mostly, as I knew him from my context, was the peace movement. And he felt very strongly, obviously, about that, and was willing to go to prison for his actions that he took, knowing that he was going to probably be arrested and charged and tried and probably convicted. And he made no pretense that no defense things charged, but said that there was a law higher than the federal laws in his mind, and he believed that he was following the higher Lord when he did the activities to try to raise attention. He never thought, as I understand it, that he was going to stop the wars that he protested against, but rather what he wanted to do is to prick the consciousness of people who were concerned in varying ways and to give them some substance to chew on regarding why the war was not the answer and violence was not the answer. And he conducted the retreats usually. Sometimes he would lecture. But on the retreats, he would usually talk about passages from the Old Testament or New Testament, from which he drew lessons about civil action and civil disobedience and what Christ did and what, as he understood it, Christ was asking of people who felt the same way. And he would talk and give it back, but then he would ask questions. He would ask questions of the audience and try to get them to articulate the reasons that they had been attracted to the movement. And he was generally successful. So people who initially just wanted to hear him were drawn into it. And I think in that way, really brought them to the table in a more direct way and involved them in a more direct way. And in addition to the retreats, I went to certain of the actions which he held, one of which I remember down in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where people burned draft cards. And then, of course, annually there was from the 1980s on, I think, there was a walk in New York City from the east side around the UN over to the Intrepid, the aircraft carrier Intrepid, by people from everywhere. And that walk, which up to 1,000 people would march across the Manhattan and stopped and did the reenacted the Stations of the Cross as they might apply to the surroundings that we walked. So they would stop at the some of the federal agencies that participated in what Dan and others felt were inappropriate activities. And we would pray, and we would march, and we would hand out information to people. And then we went over to the Intrepid, and people who chose to would cross the line over there. They had, the federal officials would draw a line and said, you can do your actions up to this line, but if you cross over, you will be arrested. I was arrested once, chose to go beyond, go over that line. And by that time, this was in the 90s, I think, or maybe into the 2000 years. This was an annual thing, and people knew what was expected and knew violent activity. So, and the police were usually Irish Catholic, or many times were Irish Catholic, and got to know Dan over the years, so that it was a very convivial happening oftentimes, although still very serious. And when I participated, the people who did cross the line, probably 10 or 12 of them, of us, were arrested and taken to a lockup in Midtown and processed and released. And I think 2 or 3 weeks later, we went down, called to a hearing down in the Broadway somewhere. And I pled guilty. And as I recall, there was no real punishment at the time. But you did have to stand up, and probably I have a record somewhere.
It's time for radio news about radio waves.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Slate reports that last week, 4 U.S. senators sent a letter critical of the Connect Home program that is supposed to help rural Americans get broadband internet service to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs Connect Home. Senators Shelley Moore Capito, Republican from West Virginia, Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York, Angus King, Independent from Maine, and Jean Shaheen, Democrat from New Hampshire, complained about the quality of the internet that Connect Home provides. Connect Home sets up 4 megabits per second download and 1 megabits per second upload as broadband, though the Federal Communications Commission recently updated those figures to 25 megabits per second download speed and 3 megabits per second upload speed in January 2015. Quote, federal policymakers must ensure that taxpayer-supported infrastructure is sufficiently robust to handle demand. It is not only a matter of fairness that rural Americans can fully utilize broadband-enabled resources, but also a matter of ensuring that taxpayers are receiving the full economic development return on their investments, unquote, the senators wrote to the Agriculture Department. The FCC's Lifeline program for low-income Americans provides 10 megabits per second downloads. Most government internet subsidies, Slate reports, set aside $9.25 per household for broadband, which won't get anyone blazing internet speeds. This is Tom Rowe for Wayfarm Radio and WGXC.
Next, we have these reports.
Melanie Lukosiewicz in the Greene County News reports that the U.S. Department of Labor ruled CSX Transportation violated a federal safety act when it suspended a Selkirk-based employee who reported numerous alleged safety hazards. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, fined CSX more than $32,000 in damages and attorney's fees for its action against the whistleblower. The employee, a union official, sent a letter September 6, 2013, to his supervisor detailing alleged safety hazards and violations of the Federal Railroad Safety Act. Management gave the whistleblower a 5-day suspension on December 18, 2013, quote, for an alleged safety infraction, OSHA officials claim. Then in March 2014, the employee raised the issue with a complaint to OSHA. CSX must pay $27,735 in attorney's fees and $5,000 in punitive damages, as well as expunge his employment records of the suspension. Read the full story in the Greene County News.
In March, the Lexington Broadband Initiative did not win a state grant to bring better internet access to the mountainous Greene County town. But the group that wants to partner with the Margaretville Telephone Company to connect 90% of the town for an estimated $3 million will apply in round two grant rollout they hope to see this summer. To bring broadband to Lexington. So the group has recorded a second song, Second Round Woes, with residents of Lexington, Margaretville, East Jewett, and Ashland, to convince officials to help bring rural Greene County faster internet service. Glenda Lawton sings a solo and Jen Cowan plays piano on the song. The lyrics are on the WGXC newsroom.
First they say we'll get it, work for your broadband. You will get your bandwidth, that became our plan. Now the things they're saying make it all unsure. Hurting upstate families, this we can't endure. It's no wonder that we feel abused. When's our chance for grants? We sadly muse. Even $15 turns to 12 up here. That's why we need broadband. We have so many plans. Little business engines work for many hands. It's no wonder that we are confused. Was it a case of upstate being schmoozed? It feel like second-hand rose with second-round woes. We take back seat of all the NYC blows. How they promised and wild dreams were theirs too. Second.
WGXC has several programming changes. Latino America has returned the second and fourth Sundays of the month from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., hosted by Juan Sanchez. The Friday Night Vibes session takes over the Cupid Rocks show on the second and fourth Fridays of the month from 9:30 p.m. to midnight, playing high-energy dance music from Hudson resident Shivar Thomas. The Nearest Faraway Place begins the fifth Sunday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m., playing lesser-known indie, folk, country, and rock songs, hosted by Pat Lennon and Chris Hayes. Off the Rails debuted this week, the first Monday of the month, from 7 to 9:30 p.m., playing eclectic music from Charlie and Mara Ostrowski. And Ken Landon from Crossroads Brewery in Athens is doing a prog rock quarterly show the fifth Monday of the month from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Altogether Now expands on the WGXC news with local news now from 6 to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday from WGXC. And the Barbershop Talk Show is currently on hiatus.
Something to talk about. Hey, everyone, it's me, Holly Tanner.
And Justin Weaver.
And you're listening to 90.7 FM. It's a very exciting topic to talk about. Everyone loves to hear about county finances.
Yes.
We're so pleased to see what they have to say.
Well, it can be hot and sizzling, too, can it?
Absolutely, yes.
Local finances.
Nothing is sexier than county finances.
I'm telling you.
Right.
That's it.
Yes. So we do have, speak of the devil, we have our county controller, Ron Caponera. Thank you, Ron.
Hello, Holly.
Hello.
And Justin.
Hi, Ron.
Thanks for being here.
What a pleasure.
And our county treasurer, PJ Keeler, is with us.
Good morning, gang. Holly, just remember, if it wasn't for us fathers, there wouldn't be a Mother's Day.
Well, that's true.
Big day is coming up. Okay,
well,
that's right. The big Father's Day.
Let's not forget us.
Is coming up. Oh, we could never forget all the men in our lives. Isn't that right, Justin?
I've chosen to forget most of them. I still remember my father, though, yes.
That's good.
You're right.
Okay. Yes, no, we won't forget the fathers, that's for sure. And before we start talking about county finances, actually, you mentioned me wearing a lot of hats. PJ actually wears a couple hats for the county, and I want to offer congratulations because I believe Columbia County was just honored with an award for our emergency services. Can you tell us a little bit about that hat that you wear, PJ Keeler?
Yeah, I wear a few different hats. One of them is being the EMS coordinator for Columbia County. And we started a program about 5 years ago. It was actually the first in the state to have such a program whereby the county had a provider license to overlap the county services and contract with all the existing rescue squads within the county to move ambulances to depleted areas. And that is an area where maybe the ambulances were already out on calls. And by doing so, we reduced response times in those areas by over 7 minutes to medical emergencies. Now, that program was recognized in 2015 as being the best agency of the year in the six-county region, and that will be forwarded on to the state to be in competition with the state as well.
So, oh, wow.
It's a tremendous honor for the agencies in Columbia County. Our 911 center serves as the operating part of the system. Those dispatchers do a tremendous job in moving ambulances around to needed areas.
Yes, they
do. And the Board of Supervisors has, over the years, supported this financially. It's been an extremely efficient system whereby we've used a minimal amount of money and had the maximum amount of use. So it's being duplicated by some other counties throughout the state now. They're looking into it, and we're very proud of our agencies, and the best thing is it's centered around patient care and getting an ambulance to the patient in a timely manner. So the residents should be proud, and the agencies are proud. They do a great job.
Definitely. Yes, they do. Thank you for explaining that. And I think it is important that it's especially in a rural area, I'm sure getting emergency services can be a challenge. And so,
yeah, we look around a lot of other counties within the state, and we're blessed here in Columbia County to have such great workers and having the service that we have.
Absolutely. Is this considered what's the buzzword? That the consolidation? Like, was it a consolidation of?
Yeah, it's really not a consolidation, but it's more of an overlap, and it's using existing resources to get the same result in reducing response times down to residents. Each agency would have had to spend about $500,000 to increase their staffing. That's $500,000 per year.
Oh, wow.
To increase their staffing, to add an existing ambulance on. And We did the same with a budget of about $350,000 to $400,000 a year and for the whole county for all four agencies.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
How do you do that? Did you have to cut things?
It was a lot of negotiating, wasn't it, PJ, to kind of get
In order to do something extra, you have to take away from something. So
right.
I didn't know if there was something that...
We didn't take away from anything at the time. The Board of Supervisors were very supportive of the proposal because they recognized the efficiencies throughout the system. And this $350,000 to $400,000 per year that the county supports the system, if they did not do that, local municipalities probably would have had to pay three or four times that amount individually. So it's a cost savings to the taxpayer to operate it this way.
Oh. Well, and how does the controller fit into this?
Every which way.
And that's to be... hopefully. And that's to... That, and
to get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar. National headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. I'm Brandon Campbell. On today's rundown, Bernie Sanders takes home a win in West Virginia. We've got the latest on what advocates are up to for National Foster Care Month, and one state's poised to become the first to officially celebrate public lands. Our top story, another Tuesday, another presidential primary. Democrat Bernie Sanders beat out Hillary Clinton in West Virginia, though political analysts say it may not slow down the former Secretary of State's campaign. Sanders' victory Tuesday evening also won't do much to narrow Clinton's lead in delegates. However, the senator from Vermont has managed to nudge Clinton on certain issues recently. According to the New York Times, Sanders' push for a single-payer health care system led to Clinton embracing the idea of letting people as young as age 50 to buy into Medicare plans. Still, Clinton's holding on to what's fast becoming an overwhelming majority of delegates. Meanwhile, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump continued a string of victories Tuesday, taking home wins among Republican voters in both West Virginia and Nebraska. Now moving from the world of politics to politically charged social issues, while transgender bathroom bills continue to make headlines in states like North Carolina, LGBT people in Michigan are facing discrimination in many other parts of their lives. Mary Sherman has more.
Anne Anglem of Fenton and her partner married in Canada, but their union was not legally recognized here until the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of marriage equality last year. Anglem explains it was also difficult to jointly adopt a child. And while they made it through those challenges, she says as LGBT individuals, they can still face discrimination in housing and employment.
That still needs to change here because we can get married one day and be showing our photographs to a coworker and get fired the next day.
Attempts in the past decade to update the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act in Michigan to add sexual orientation to the list of protections have failed to gain traction. Some proposals didn't receive support from the LGBT community because they didn't also specify protections for those who are transgender.
The high rate of pregnancy-related deaths in the United States compared to other developed countries is raising concern among health officials. And in Washington state, lawmakers are trying to battle the trend by reestablishing a maternal mortality review panel, not seen in the state since the 1930s. Representative Melanie Stambaugh, who introduced the House version of the bill, says she used California's panel as a template.
When you look at some of the work that California has done after having a panel and reducing their maternal mortality rates by about two-thirds, I wanted to have that same result here in Washington state.
The state health department says the panel's tentatively scheduled to convene early next year. States originally created maternal mortality panels about a century ago, before the advent of modern medicine, when deaths in pregnancy were much higher. In the U.S., there are more than 18 maternal deaths for every 100,000 babies born. Meanwhile, in Canada, the rate is just above 8. It's National Foster Care Month, and advocates are trying to bring awareness to the issue so more children can find a permanent home. Veronica Carter reports.
There are several nonprofit groups in Arkansas that try to recruit and work with foster families. One is Project Zero. Christy Irwin heads it up and has also been a foster parent for 19 years. And she's permanently adopted two children. The group holds events to match children in the foster system with potential parents. Project Zero also has three traveling exhibits that are taken around the state with pictures and stories of kids waiting to be adopted. She says it's crucial because once people see a face, not just paperwork, more children find what she calls a forever home.
Now, I can't tell you how many people have walked up to the Heart Gallery exhibit and been drawn to one specific child. Just out of the whole exhibit, they're just drawn to that one child, which is really a miracle, and just such an incredible blessing.
On any given day across the nation, there are about 500,000 children in foster care.
Wading through the paperwork involved in getting government help to pay for child care can be overwhelming to already overworked parents. Stephanie Carson has more on the findings of a new national report.
A new report by the Center for American Progress looks at how difficult it can be for low-income families to navigate an underfunded child care support system. Its author, Judith Warner, says as child care costs keep rising, applying for and finding assistance can become a full-time job of its own.
Imagine doing all the things that you already do, while in addition, you have to file a degree of paperwork that goes far beyond all those medical forms and permission forms you normally file just for school.
Warner says when budgets are tight, families are forced to choose cost over quality in child care.
After months of partisan conflict, Colorado is set to become the first state in the nation to officially celebrate its public lands.
Senate Bill 21, now awaiting Governor John Hickenlooper's signature, sets the third Saturday in May as Public Lands Day. Suzanne O'Neill with the Colorado Wildlife Federation says the move is an opportunity to inspire young people who enjoy outdoor recreation to become stewards of wildlife habitat on lands owned by all Americans.
This is something that we all can treasure, we can access for recreation. It contributes a huge amount to our Colorado economy, and so it's fitting and proper that we celebrate it.
The bill was introduced on the first day of the session and quickly drew the ire of some lawmakers who amended the measure to include anti-federal management sentiments. Ultimately, both sides agreed to remove language politicizing the bill, and diversion simply calling for the creation of a public lands day cleared the General Assembly. I'm Eric Galatis.
And that's today's update. I'm Brandon Campbell for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts overnight a chilly 43 degrees. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 73. Increasing clouds Thursday night with a low around 49, and then showers likely before 2 p.m. on Friday. Continuing throughout the day, with an 80% chance of rain with a high near 64 on Friday. Rain continues Friday night with a low around 48. Saturday, there's a chance of showers before 8 a.m. Then it should be partly sunny with a high near 63.
This is Timmer with the community calendar for WGXC. Go to wgxc.org and you can add events to the community calendar. Just click on the Add an Event button at the top of the community calendar page at wgxc.org. Copy and paste the information about your community event in the boxes, and soon folks like me will read your event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it at wgxc.org.
Thursday, there's a American Red Cross blood drive at the Coxsackie Athens High School. It's from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Thursday, May 12th. Hudson has a planning board meeting, 6:30 p.m. at the Hudson City Hall Thursday. Hudson has a planning board meeting Thursday, May 12th at 6:30 p.m., starting off with public hearings over the possible 55-room hotel at 41 Cross Street in Hudson. New Baltimore has a planning board meeting at 7 p.m. at New Baltimore Town Hall in Hanacroy. Thursday, May 12th, Gideon's Knot has a preview performance at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Wednesday's Song of the Day comes from Haldwardian. They're playing with Ronia at the Half Moon in Hudson. This is Over the Laptop.
What? Dogs? Does she live on a farm or what? 15 dogs.
I seen the way that she looked into the waves, and I knew from that moment she was gone, gone, long gone.
Avenue. Dabba dabba doo, I just see that shit splitting up. Blowtorch, you got the butane, I got the. What you wanna do, babe? Escape to this other place.
Dang, did you like it?